No crazy Shiloh this week, really just something very, I think, very lemaisa, because I think this is becoming a more and more popular thing, even though I would bet that probably none of you have ever heard of this before. How many of you have ever heard of sous vide cooking? Sous vide.
That English?
No, it is not English. Sous vide is French. It is French for vacuum packed.
Oh,
So you've seen it.
I've seen
So
it.
we have.
I don't really know much about
Okay, so this is a it's a real legitimate halacha lemaisa issue that's going to be more and more nogea, because this is a form of cooking that's becoming more and more popular. I was talking to Rav Sacks about it. I asked him, certain shailas related to it, and he said, I had never heard of it. I was at a fancy restaurant. I was at a restaurant, he said, and they had one item on the menu that was twice as expensive as everything else. So he said, I was curious. I asked the waiter, why is it twice as expensive as everything else? And he said, because this is sous vide. And he said, I didn't know what it meant, but now that you're explaining it to me, I understand what it means. So let me explain what sous vide. I'll tell you the shaila first, and then I'll tell you. No, I need to explain what sous vide cooking is first, and then I can tell you the shaila. The first time I was asked to talk about this was almost a year ago. I remember having a brief conversation with Rav Schachter about it. He wasn't comfortable enough yet with the metzias to really give a psak. Maybe I'll follow up with him sometime soon. But here's the metzias. Here's the way it works. Normally, if you're a man and you want to cook something, so what do? You take your slab of meat, you go out to the barbecue, you turn it on the fire, you throw it down on the barbecue for a few minutes, take it off when it's nice and crisp on the outside, and you cut it open and it's red and bloody on the inside, and you eat your meat. So that's the way it's been done since the cavemen, right? Men have not changed much in the way we cook. However, when you sous vide, what you are doing is as follows. You take a piece of meat, let's say, or chicken or anything else, but let's assume you take a piece of steak or brisket, and you put it in a plastic bag. In that bag, you put whatever spices and flavors you're going to want to be absorbed in that meat. You seal the bag. You put that bag in a pot of water. Now, you make sure that it remains submerged under the water, so you clip it off onto the side of the pot so that it remains, doesn't float up. It stays submerged completely under the water. You then put in a sous vide machine. The sous vide machine is like a stick that goes into the water that you program to a very specific temperature, and it rotates the water around at a very, very specific temperature, consistent, slow cooking. So what you will generally, usually very low temperature. So what you'll do is, let's say you'll set it when you're cooking in the oven. For example, I don't know how many of you have much experience. When you're cooking in the oven, 350 is a typical setting. On a sous vide, a typical setting, 145, 147, something like that. So for example, the shiloh that I so what's the advantage? What's the advantage of sous vide cooking? It takes much, much longer. You'll have something cooking for days. You could have something cooking for 3, 4 days. So what's the advantage? So there are a couple of advantages.
Well cooked, it's well cooked.
So it's softer. By well cooked, I'm not sure what you mean, but it's evenly cooked. It's meaning if you were to cut open a piece of steak that comes off the barbecue, it's black on the outside and then gray as it gets toward the center, and then more pinkish, and if it's rare on the inside, it's like really red on the inside. This is completely the same through and through. It doesn't lose any of its juices or any of its flavor in the cooking. And the slow cooking breaks down the meat in such a way where even a tough piece of meat becomes soft. So I'll tell you the shaila that I was asked. There's a fellow in my shul who's very into his meat. He grew up with like four barbecues in his in his front porch, and in his backyard right now he has a smoker and three grills. I don't know what you ever need three grills for. He enters barbecue contests. This is the metzias, right? So he got a sous vide machine and he's very excited about it. And he called me last week and he said, I want to make ribs for Rosh Hashanah. So I said, okay, gesundheit, go make ribs for Rosh Hashanah. He said, no, I want to start cooking it on Thursday morning. I want to put it in the sous vide machine Thursday morning so that I'll have it for Sunday night for Rosh Hashanah. So what's his shaila? So through Shabbos, it's going to be cooking. So it happens to be, we'll see at the end, I was making, I told him he can do it. And on Rosh Hashanah night, the first night of Rosh Hashanah, as I was finishing my meal, he brought me over some of the ribs. He said, you have to see what I'm, you know, what I'm talking about, that I'm not crazy. That this. So I said, okay, I'll try it. You know, I was stuffed, but hey, there's always room for ribs, right? That's what they say. So I took a fork and knife. He's like, put down the knife. You don't need the knife. I'm like, it's ribs. No, you need to cut it off. Said, don't worry, you don't need the knife. Take my fork, I put it on the meat. It just slides like right off of the rib. It's like mush. It goes in your mouth. The most flavorful meat you could imagine, and soft. Like I didn't even have to chew it. It was unbelievable. It was really, really good. He may be a skilled sous vide chef. I don't know that it works this way necessarily for everybody, but I would imagine that, you know, that's, you can't get a piece of, you can't get ribs to taste that way and to have that consistency by putting them on a grill, you know, by barbecuing them. So that was the shayla. The shayla was, can you put them up Thursday morning so that he can have them for Sunday night? So he could have the ribs for Sunday night. So I started to think, that's a shayla, but there's a shayla that's going to come up much more often. And especially, the reason why I think this is nogei lemaisa is I spoke about it in shul, and on Shabbos, and I thought that like everyone would fall asleep and, you know, it wouldn't be interesting to anybody. And people were very interested, and like five people came over to me afterwards and said, yeah, I always sous vide or cook with sous vide. I don't know how to use it properly. You know, I sous vide. I don't know. I always do the sous vide thing. And so there, this is, it used to be something that was a specialty thing that chefs would do in high-class restaurants. Now for under $150, when you go register at Bed Bath & Beyond, you know, when you're a chassan and kala, or the kala wants to get whatever, and you're just smiling and nodding, so she might be putting a sous vide on the registry. It's becoming fairly common. One fellow came over to me in shul and said he has three different sous vide machines. Yeah, I don't know why you would need three, but he had, that's the metzius. He has three different sous vide machines. So this is going to be a shayla, not just in a strange case where Rosh Hashanah is on a Sunday night and you want to put it up on Thursday. It's going to be a shayla people are going to want for Shabbos afternoon. They're going to want to prepare meat for Shabbos afternoon. Now, and that means they're going to leave it in the sous vide ready from Wednesday, let's say, and it will be fully done on Shabbos for your Shabbos lunch meal. So is that permissible? So I actually asked this father, I said, how come you never asked me about this for Shabbos? He said, normally when I cook meat, I like it crisp on the outside. So even though I want it evenly cooked, I like crisp on the outside. So that I can't do for Shabbos, because what I'll do is I'll sous vide it, and then I'll take it out of the sous vide and I'll blowtorch the outside to make it crisp on the outside. I never even, a blowtorch, yeah, he said, yeah, it's, you know, don't worry about it. So that you can't do on Shabbos, obviously. But let's say, you know, he was making these ribs, which he didn't blowtorch. You know, can you have that for Shabbos? So what's the shaila over here? What are the shailas? What are the issues, the halacha? So shehiya is obviously a significant issue. And the other major issue? I think there's one more major issue. It's sealed in a plastic bag.
So there's no way, like, the pot could be,
but you pour the water out anyway. You're not going to reuse the same water. Are you talking about if he wants to put milchigs in the same? I don't know what milchigs you eat sous vide. Let's not even go there. Let's stick in our chayim. Let's not even go to Yerden. The other issue, I think that would be a significant issue that has to be discussed over here, is hatmana. Because what's happening? You're taking the meat and you're completely submerging it in heated water, and that's how the meat is cooking. It's completely surrounded by this heated water that's cooking the meat. So is that a violation of Hatmana B'davar HaMosef Hevel? So these are the two issues. Now, one second. So let's slow. So what I want to do is first discuss basic background to Shehiya, because some of you may be very familiar with Shehiya and all of its rules. Some of you may be not. So basic background to Shehiya, apply Shehiya to sous vide. Basic background to Hatmana, apply Hatmana to sous vide. And then talk about this unique Shaila, where you're not even using it on Shabbos, you're using it afterwards, that there may be an additional Kula that applies over here that doesn't apply when you're going to use it on Shabbos. So basic background to Shehiya. Mishnah Maseches Shabbos Daf Lamed Vav says that if raw food began cooking before Shabbos, you may not leave it on an open flame on Shabbos. It's an Isser Midrabbanan, because you're not actually cooking on Shabbos. You did the Maisa Bishul before Shabbos, so it's only an Isser Midrabbanan, but you're not allowed to do it because we're afraid Shem Yechat B'Kachalim. A person might adjust the flame to make it cook more quickly when he sees that it's not cooking as quickly as he would like it to. And that is Halacha Pesuka in Shulchan Aruch Siman Reish Nun Gimel Si'if Aleph. Now the question is, so how cooked does your food have to be before Shabbos in order to allow it to keep on cooking on an open flame on Shabbos? Machlokes Tanayim. Chananya, Shabbos Daf Lamed Vav, Chananya says, as long as the food got to Machl Ben Drusai before Shabbos, which means barely edible, B'shas Adcha Gadol, if you needed to eat it, you would eat it, barely edible, let's say a half cooked, a third cooked, whatever it is, then you'd be allowed to keep it on the open flame on Shabbos. The Shulchan Aruch and Reish Nun Gimel Sif Aleph quotes the Shita of Chananya as a Yesh Omrim. However, the Shita of the Rabbanan is that you're only allowed to leave it cooking if it's already gotten to the point where it is not only Mevushal Kol Tzorcho, but at this point it is Mitzdamek V'Ralo. It is actually becoming worse by cooking longer, meaning you've hit the point where it was at its peak, and now by leaving it on the fire for longer, it's only degrading the meat or the food. Only then can you leave it cooking on Shabbos. And in fact, Shulchan Aruch quotes this as the first daya in Shulchan Aruch. So how do we paskin? Both dayas are quoted in Shulchan Aruch. How do we paskin? So Shulchan Aruch, like I said, quotes both opinions. The Rama says our minhag is to be mekel. So for Ashkenazim, certainly, the Rama says our minhag is to be mekel like Chananya. So it sounds great. All you have to do is make sure, the guy was putting up his sous vide on Thursday, so make sure it's machal ben drusai by Shabbos, and you're good to go, right? That would solve all the world's problems as far, not all the world's problems, but the world's shihiyah problems as far as it relates to sous vide. Is it really at Machal Ben Drusai a day later? So I asked a few people who do this form of cooking, and what they tell me is, within hours, it is Mevushal Kol Tzorcho. The way it cooks so evenly that the temperature that you set the water at, this guy was cooking ribs at 147 degrees for however many hours it was, 72 hours or whatever. When you set that temperature, within hours, the entire meat through and through has reached that temperature, and it is therefore fully cooked. But it's mitztamek v'yafala. The longer you leave it, the better the meat is getting. It never gets really to a point of mitztamek v'ralo. The whole point is that you're slowly, slowly breaking down the meat to the point where it becomes so soft. So that's the mitzvah. But is this really the psak halacha? Rama says we can be mekel like Chananya. However, the Bir Halacha says, no, we should be machmir. Why should we be machmir? The Rama was mekel. So the Bir Halacha says, well, you got to look at the Beis Yosef in terms of what the svara to be mekel is. And Beis Yosef, he writes that it's not that we reject the machmir opinion, says the Bir Halacha. And Beis Yosef, he writes that, in a very charitable way of explaining it, Yisrael adukim b'mitzvah oneg Shabbos u'bevadei lo yishmu lanu. Jews love oneg Shabbos. We're very into the mitzvah of oneg Shabbos, and therefore, if we were to be machmir and tell people that they can't leave their food cooking, they're not going to listen anyway. So says the Chafetz Chaim in Bir Halacha, I'll listen. You know, if you tell me to be machmir, I'm happy to be machmir. So we who are very frum and are happy to listen to the machmir opinion, we should be machmir. That's what the Bir Halacha writes. Chaznish and Siman Lamed Zayin Sifkat Gimel Dibur Maschul B'Mishnah Brura says no need to be machmir. In fact, he says maybe it's best to be mekel, because we should demonstrate that that's the halacha. You know, there's such a concept that when the halacha is like the more mekel opinion, show that we believe it. So dafka go lakula. Dafka have things that are still mitstamek viyafalo or not yet quite fully cooked, and leave them on an open flame going into Shabbos. Unbelievable, no? You have such a concept that kiven denafak mipume. The Gemara is an expression that once a posik paskin leheter. So we have to show that we really believe it. You know, that we know how to paskin halacha. The Gemara in Brachas about hamotzi lechem and aretz versus motzi lechem and aretz. What? He says, Hamotzi lechem minoyim. Every fool knows that Hamotzi is a valid bracha. Let me see him say the bracha in such a way where it's a machlokas, and he's showing me that he knows how to paskin. That's a kunz. Someone told me one of Rav Moshe Feinstein's grandchildren, because Rav Moshe paskin that chalav ha-companies is not a problem of chalav akum, is makbid dafka to have chalav ha-companies. And his wife, this fellow's wife, is makbid on chalav Yisrael. So he dafka has two bottles of milk in the fridge. One for his wife, she could have her chalav Yisrael, and one he dafka has chalav ha-companies. Rav Moshe writes about nefesh should be makbid anyway, or whatever. Still, afal tikein. He thinks that keeping the nafik mipume, you have to make a point of the kula. So Chaznish has such a similar idea. Make a point of being makel over here. So what do we do over here? You have machlokas tanayim. Okay, so you look at the Shulchan Aruch. You have 2 days in Shulchan Aruch. So you look at the Ramah. Ramah says we give makel. But then you have Mishnah Brura and Chaznish in disagreement about what you're allowed to do. So how do you solve a shehir problem with chaladeis? Yeah, you have food that you want to keep cooking over Shabbos. Very simple solution. In the times of the Gemara, the Mishnah says that the coals needed to be removed entirely or covered up as a reminder that the flame shouldn't be touched. And in modern kitchens we cover the flame. And that's what's called garuf v'katum, what we call a blech, Rav Moshe, Negros Moshe, Chel Galus, and Sadi Gimel. You cover the fire, and that's a sufficient hecker that you're going to know not to adjust the knobs. Mishra Brewer writes this way, Sukkot and Pe'alv, Chayadim and Kal Chav Sif Yud Alev, Rav Moshe, Chel Galus, and Sadi Gimel, right? They all say it like this. Chazanish was not so pleased with the blech, but okay. You in some way you make it that you're not going to be able to adjust it. But wait a second. You ever cook on a stovetop? Anyone here ever make eggs or noodles? I don't have confidence in anyone make more than that. But let's say eggs or noodles. You want to raise the flame. So what do? You take a bottle of gasoline and you pour it on the flame. And just what? Is that how you raise the flame on a stovetop? No. That is not what we do to a modern stovetop. What do? If you want to raise the flame, you turn the knob to raise the flame, right? So covering the fire is going to stop me from raising the flame. What should really stop me from raising the flame? Covering the knobs. So Rav Aaron Cutler, Rabbi Eider quotes from Rav Aaron Cutler. Rav Aaron Cutler held, nowadays you should cover the knobs. It's not the flame. Rav Moshe held, no, it was always the flame. It stays the flame. You cover the flame. Most people are makbid to do both because you might as well. Where this becomes interesting, what? Oh, without the thing over Ramesha? They used to be all the time. When I was growing up, no one had the thing that covered the knobs. It was just a flat sheet over the fire. Yeah. But now, we learned to be machmir for both Rav Aaron Cutler and Ramesha. What if you forgot to put the blech on? Mishavur, Reshon, Gimel, Sivkar, Chavtes, Paskins, the food shouldn't be eaten until Motzoi Shabbos. You can also... If it was at least a third cooked, then you could definitely be mekel. You could definitely be mekel at least b'di'eved, right? Like Chananya. Now let's apply all this to suvi. Let's apply all of this. So what do we have over here? We said it is fully cooked, but it's mitstamik v'yafalo. It's getting better. It's not getting worse. So this is subject to our machlokas Chananya and the Chacham, whether it would be a violation of shihia, right? How do we paskin? I don't know. Bir Alacha says we should be machmir. Chazanish says we should dafka be mekel. Machlokas mishbur chazanish, and this is going to be unique. In both issues that we're discussing, mishbur is going to be the machmir one, and chazanish is going to be the mekel one. Chazanish is mekel. So the chazanish says that it would be mutter. Is there any way to make it garuf v'katum? So none of you have ever seen it. It's a thing that goes into the water. If you were to cover the heating element where the water goes through and gets heated, there must be some sort of coil inside the machine that heats the water that goes through it. If you were to cover the heating, it just wouldn't work. The whole thing just would cease to function. But it's not a knob, but on the top there's like a program, you know, you could push the buttons to turn it to whatever temperature that you desire. Thermostat. So can you maybe just cover that? So according to Rav Aaron Cutler, L'chora, yes. Although many of them have Bluetooth technology so that if you forgot to turn it on and you're away, you can go on your cell phone and set it. So you'd have to cover every internet access, you know, computer in the world. What? No, before Shabbos, I'm saying you'd have to cover any way that you would normally adjust it. I guess put yourself on away, but which you probably do anyway. So, but it has it does many of them do have Bluetooth technology. Probably if you put foil over the thing, it would mess up the Bluetooth. I don't know much about it. I would imagine that would mess up the Bluetooth. So maybe according to Aaron Cutler, covering the part of it that actually controls the temperature would be good enough. Another sniff lahakel over here is that there is something called a kedera chaisa. Kedera chaisa is an exception to the isur of shihia. What's a kedera chaisa? Let's say you have a really raw piece of tough meat. What's the reason that you're not allowed to leave something cooking into Shabbos? We're afraid you're going to raise the flame to make it cook more quickly so that it will be ready for you to eat tonight. What if you have something that no matter what you do, it's not going to be ready for you to eat tonight? So then, that's what we call a kedera chaisa. Then there's no isur of shihiyah. You have a tough piece of ox meat, you just put it up right before Shabbos, it's not going to be ready for the Friday night meal. Or, many poskim suggest, something that's a purposeful slow cooker, like a crock pot. Slow cooker, that's what it's called. You put in raw chalent, which takes a good amount of time. Beans take a long time until it goes... Put in a raw chalent right before Shabbos. No matter what you do, you can turn the crock pot on high. It's not going to be ready for the Friday night meal. So some argue that maybe would qualify as a kedera chaisa. Maybe, a sous vide, which is meant to cook over the course of 72 hours, right? So there is no speeding up the cooking because that's not the point. The point is to keep it at a very slow... It's not exactly a kedera chaisa because it's not raw. But the svara of kedera chaisa, that there's no motivation whatsoever to adjust it, maybe the svara of kedera chaisa would apply over here. Sharatzion writes something like this, that when you're putting something for weeks at a time, you know, to lezman meruba, that maybe it's not a violation of shihia. Sharatzion writes this, I believe he writes this in Hilchos Yom HaKippurim, of all places, but in Siman Tov Resh Tes have gotten Gimel, but the Sharatzion says something like this in the bottom of the Mishnah. So that's an additional svara to maybe be makel over here. Any other svaras to be makel? What do we have? We have the Shita of Chananya, which we might paskin like anyway. We have the possibility of Garuf HaKatan by covering the control panel. And we have the possibility of a general svara of Kedera Chaisa, that this might count as a Kedera Chaisa. Good. Those are the three svaras l'kula that we have. Moving on, but the svaras l'hachmir are maybe we paskin like the bir halacha suggests l'chumra that it needs to be misamik v'ralo and it's not, and you can't maybe you can't just say kedera chaisa on something that's not raw, you know, something that's fully cooked. You can't just call it kedera chaisa, and maybe garuf hakatum means you have to cover the heating element. You can't just cover the knot. So, okay, there's certainly what to argue about. What about Hatmana? So in order to violate Hatmana, Gemara Shabbos Tav Lamed Daled says, you can't insulate a pot in anything that intensifies the heat, lest you insulate it with coals, and then you'll come to stoke the coals. Same concern. Shami yichata b'kol, and you'll stoke the coals, you'll be in violation of Mavir and Bishul. And if it's a davar mosif hevel, it's something that actually adds more heat to the pot than it otherwise would have had, you're not even allowed to do that on Erev Shabbos. You're not even allowed to insulate on Erev Shabbos. But in order to violate Atmana, four conditions must be met. Condition number one, the Ramban Reshon Gimel Sefalov writes that it has to be totally enclosed, totally insulated, totally wrapped in. The extent of the enclosure is subject to machlokas, primugadim in Reshon and Tess, and Mishpsozav, Sivkat and Gimel. Talks about this, the Suffolk and Shlomo Zalman is said to have been machmir if it's mostly surrounded. That's where Shlomo Zalman asked for a crock pot. He thought that was hatmana, even though the top of the pot is not surrounded by the, only the sides and the bottom are surrounded by the heating element. He thought that was hatmana. Rav Moshe and Nigus Moshe Archaim Chelik Dalit Seminai and Dalit Os Dalit was Mekel unless it was covered on top as well. Rav Shecht was Mekel that he thought the crock pot's not Hatmana. Okay, but condition number one, it's got to be totally enclosed. Do you have that here by the Suvi? Totally enclosed? Yeah, it's completely enclosed by the one. Second thing you need to fulfill in order for it to be a violation of Atmana, the Shulchan Aruch and Reishon and Zayin Sif Hey, the food has to still be in the Kli Rishon. It has to still be in the Kli that it was cooked in. Do you have that over here? Absolutely, you have that over here. It's still in the Kli Rishon. Third, Shulchan Aruch, Reishon and Zayin Sif Beis, you have to have Kavana Lahatmin. Your kavana in wrapping it is to add heat, is to either maintain or add heat. It's about the temperature. That's why you're doing this. If you're putting a cover on a pot to protect the food from the elements, from bugs from falling in, that's not hatmana, right? Hatmana is only when your intention is to do hatmana. I remember, I have, thank God, three amazing sisters who are all Nashim Tzidkaniyos and wonderful people who all went to a seminary in Israel called Michlala. One of them came home, I remember, and came over to me like before her first Shabbos home and said, Arye, I think we have to like make sure that everything in the kitchen in our house is okay, because I think Iman Abba might be doing something that's in violation of of Hilcha Shabbos. I'm like, first of all, if it's anything in the kitchen, Abba's not doing anything. Iman may be doing something, but Abba's not doing anything. She's like, okay, fine. I said, second of all, they've already been through my brother, who's a very big Talmud Chacham and is older than all of us. And third, they know what they're doing. So anyway, I said, what are you concerned about? She said, well, they take the challah out from the oven. They turn off the oven right before Shabbos, so the oven's still hot. They leave the challah in the still warm oven. They take the challah right before the meal. They put it on the challah tray, and they cover it with the challah cover. Yeah. Isn't that hatmana? What? They take the warm challah, put it on the challah tray, and cover the challah cover. Isn't that hatmana? So this is where a little bit of knowledge is very dangerous, right? That is not hatmana. Why is that not hatmana? Well, there are lots of reasons, but one of the reasons, first of all, it's not in the Kli Rishon, but you can write Dover Gush, it's all the Kli Rishon, but most fundamentally, the challah cover is not there to maintain the heat or retain the heat of the challah. Why is the challah cover there? Shloira pas boshto, or zecher leman, or whatever the reasons are, and the six nafkaminas, or whatever. You can give a whole shiur about the reasons, but it has nothing to do with the heat. Plus, the fourth tanai of hatmana doesn't apply to the challah with the challah cover, and that is that the wrapping has to be in direct contact with either the food or the container that the food is in. That's probably why warming drawers are not hatmana, because if you put a pan in the warming drawer, it doesn't fit snugly into the exact shape of the warming drawer. There's like airspace in between. So in our case, it absolutely, water takes the shape of, you put something in the water immediately engulfs it. So l'chora, we've got a hatmana issue, right? So how do we get out of the hatmana issue? So my first thought was, no, this isn't hatmana. Hatmana is when you take, like I said to my brother, I remember when I first had this conversation, I said, you take a piece of chicken and put it in a pot of water to cook in a pot of water. Is that called that it's hatmana in the water? So my brother correctly pointed out, he said, if you put chicken in a pot of water, if only we had a name for that, maybe chicken soup. There is a name for that. That's called chicken soup. And the reason it's not hatmana is because the soup is also part of the food. The soup is what you're eating. It's not the heating element, it's what you're eating. That's why it's not hatmana. There is a discussion if you put kishka in a chalent or a kugel in a chalent, whether that would be hatmana. Because it's not the same food, it's a separate food. But if your kavana is not lahatmin, your kavana is to get the flavor of the chalent into the kugel or into the kishka. Kishka is not as popular anymore, but into the kugel, we've gotten much healthier. The greasy potato kugel instead of kishka. So if that's your kavana, so then it's then that's not hatmana either. So that wasn't a good svara to just say that the water is really the cooking agent rather than something that you're being matmin. That wasn't a good svara. Here's the real svara. There is a Gemara in Shabbos, in Daf Mem, I believe, where the Gemara tells us that you're allowed to take a pach shemen and put it in a tub of hot water, in a pot of hot water. And that's not a problem. So Mishmura writes in Reish Nuches Sivkat and Beis, Sha'asur likach kli ubetocho mashkat sonein v'litcho v'oso b'shabas l'kli malei mayim cham in sheis chamim betocho. You may not do this. You may not take a kli that has cold liquid and put it in a kli that has hot liquid to get warmed up, even if it's never going to get to Yad Zaladis Bosh, Zeu Derech Atmana Mamish. What does he do with the Gemara? Mishmur says very simple. The Gemara is talking about where it's not totally submerged. Over here, and therefore wouldn't be Atmana. But if you totally submerge it, yeah, that's Atmana. Comes along the Chazon Ish, and the Chazon Ish says that I understand where the Mishmur is coming from, because he saw the Gemara in Shabbos Daf Mem and Beis that you're allowed to take a kli that has shemen and put it into a larger kli that has warm water, and it must be that hatmana b'miktsas is mutter, and therefore it's going to be the Gemara must be talking about just hatmana b'miktsas. Says the Chazon Ish, but what if you paskin like me, like my chumra, which is machlokes rishonim, machlokes in shulchan aruch, that even hatmana b'miktsas is asur, is called hatmana, even partial submersion is called hatmana. What are you going to do with the Gemara then? So the Chazon Ish says it must be that there's no isur hatmana when you put into a pot of hot water. That's not an isur of hatmana, because the Gemara says it's not. I can't just say the Gemara is only talking about miktsas. No, because that's also hatmana. The Chazon Ish's big chumra about the definition of hatmana turns out to be a huge kula, in that he allows hatmana in a pot of warm water. Wow, so there you have it. Is the sous vide a problem of hatmana? Mishnah Brura? Yes. Chazon Ish? No, no problem. So both on the Shehiyah and on the hatmana, Mishnah Brura, we got problems. Chazon Ish, no problem. Great. I thought I had another sniff lahakel on both of these things. Yeah.
Isn't there a discussion whether you want to advise about the like usually like classic case of Atmana is like where you.
Yeah, that's what they're talking about, Kishka and Chalent and things like that. But over here, the water is not the ochel. Right? The water is something that's providing heat. That's its function.
Like, I know that, like, classic case of like Atmana is like where you like have like a towel or like. Yeah.
That is the most normal case of Atmana. Like, yeah, they have a towel. Like, they used to sell these things that go around urns. You know how some like old Europeans they can't drink just regular hot water, it's got to be so hot that you have to go to the hospital if you take a sip, right? So they used to sell these things to keep the water in the urns very hot. They sold like a sleeve that fits snugly around the urn, and you zip it up and it's real tight around the urn and it makes it much hotter, and it would say on it, L'kavod Shabbos Kodesh. Rabbi Willig Shlita used to always say it should say L'chilul Shabbos Kodesh, because that's what it is. It's a violation of Atmana B'davar Amos Vevel. It's Vaday Chilul Shabbos. But I thought I had another big sniff L'kula, and then I realized that I don't. You know, did we invent the wheel over here with sous vide? Was this really a brand new idea of taking a heating element, sticking it in water and warming the water? This is not the first time in history this ever happened. When I was in 8th grade, I had a Rebbe in South Shore, Rabbi Pressman. Rabbi Pressman was a great Rebbe. He had trouble with his voice. He kept losing his voice. So he always had to drink hot water throughout the day, constantly. I should probably do that too. So he would keep a cup of water, a pitcher of water and a cup, and he had this thing that plugged into the wall, and it was like a coil, and you'd stick it into his cup, and it would heat up the water in his cup. So instead of having to go out to the urn, he would just have this coil, it would heat up the water in his cup. This has existed for many years. Now, it didn't keep to a precise temperature or whatever, and it, you know, it didn't do what a sous vide does. But the notion of having something that you stick into a cup and then it heats up the water, that existed. Rav Shlomo Zalman has a tshuva, Michal Shlomo Chelik Aleph Simi Yud Beis, but most importantly in the footnote, Ha'ara 3, unbelievable. He talks about this mazleg chashmali that you put into a cup of water and it heats the water, and says Rav Shlomo Zalman, I had a conversation with the Chazon Ish, says Rav Shlomo Zalman. This is remarkable. I would, you know, to be a fly on the wall when the Chazon Ish and Rav Shlomo Zalman are talking about electricity, you know, in general, about anything, but about electricity, like you can't imagine, they had such different views. So Rav Shlomo Zalman said, I had a conversation with the Chazon Ish. He says, and I always thought that these things are only bishul midrabbanan. There's no eish, it's not bishul midaraisa. And I thought that's a chash v'yidiyah, because hospitals should be aware of this. So he told that to the Chazon Ish. And the Chazon Ish, right, the Chazon Ish said to him that, no, even though there's no eish, since it's cooking through a zerem chashmal, and the zerem shel chashmal normally creates eish, it's therefore like a toldas eish, and it's bishul midaraisa. Shlomo Zalman writes, Bialdusi, in my naivete, my immaturity, or he writes, V'yaldus ha'isabi, lomar, sherak harishonim hayu cholim lomar chidish gadol kazeh. He said, I said to the Chazon Ish, you're an achron, you can't say a svara like that. That's too big of a chidish. Achu chazer v'heshiv, sheledaito, hu pashut, ve'in tzrichim klalios rashba, lomar davar zeh. Chazon Ish says, davar pashut, you don't need to be the rashba. And Rav Shlomo Zalman gets the last word. Ulam gam hayom zetamua ma'od be'enai. I have a lot of trouble with this. So I thought, wow, if the suvi, to begin with, is only bishul midrabanan, what, we make a gzera of hatmana midrabanan, lest you what? Lest you come to violate bishul midrabanan? Shehiya midrabanan, lest you come to... Shemi yechata b'gchalim is havar da'araisa, is bishul da'araisa. So maybe the whole thing is only drabanan. And I thought, why would it only be Durabana? It doesn't make any sense to me. You're taking this thing that's a hot coil. That's not Eish. If there's such heat, it's not Eish. So in a later printing of the Mincha Shlomo, there's a footnote to the footnote. And the footnote to the footnote says that what Rav Shlomo Zalman is describing is not a coil. It's something that, and I don't get it, that was not inherently hot, but somehow reacted with the water in such a way where when you put it in the water became hot. I like almost like an induction stovetop or something. I don't know exactly how it works. Certainly without electrocuting yourself, but apparently there was this thing. But if it was actually a hot coil, then of course it's Eish, and it's Dover Pasha, that is Bishul Daraisa. So I think that was a dead end. Now what about keeping it cooking for after Shabbos, for Rosh Hashanah? This is a remarkable example of where you can learn all of Hilchos Shabbos and you won't find the relevant halacha. When do you ever have a time where you want to keep something cooking through a day that's usher to cook so that you can eat it afterwards? When do you ever have such a thing? You're going to want something cooking through a day that's usher to cook so that after that day you'll want to have a meal. Yom Kippur. You can't cook on Yom Kippur. It's usher to cook on Yom Kippur. You're allowed to cook on Rosh Hashanah. It's usher to cook on Yom Kippur. And you're going to want something cooking to eat right afterwards because you'll be starving right afterwards. In Hilchos Yom HaKippurim, the Rosh Maseches Yuma Perches and Chavav writes that the Gaonim say that you should not be matmin chamin on Erev Yom Kippur to cook through Yom Kippur in order to have for a meal on Matzah Yom Kippur. The Tur, Simen Tav Resh Tes, says, I don't get it. I don't know why one would be matmir about such a thing. I don't understand the Chumah. Bach, Tafresh Tes, suggests maybe it looks like you're being mechin from Yom Tov to Chol. Maybe it looks like you're preparing for Yom Kippur because you're doing it after Chatzos on Erev Yom Kippur. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Tafresh Tes, Evalv, Mutr lahat min chamin me'erev Yom HaKippurim motsoi Yom HaKippurim. But says the Ramah, V'yeshom she'en lahat min b'Yom HaKippurim v'chein ha'minag b'medina se'lu. Our minag is to be machmir for the Shittas HaGaonim. The Rov Rishonim don't agree with the Shittas Gaonim. Rov Rishonim assume it's for afterwards, it's fine. Shehiya, Hatmana, these are issues when you're doing it for Shabbos. But if you're going to want it for afterwards, for later, that's okay. But the Ramah says our minhag is to be machmir on Yom Kippur. Is our minhag to be machmir for Shabbos also? So it's, you can't say minna, because who would ever do this? They never did it. No one's having meals on Motzei Shabbos. So one of the suggestions of why to be machmir is because it's not even for a Sudas Mitzvah. It's for Motzei Yom Kippur. It's not really a Sudas Mitzvah. And those who show them to make will call it like a shtickle Sudas Mitzvah. But what if you're preparing it for the first night of Rosh Hashanah? So that's a real Sudas Mitzvah. Right? That's a real Sudas Mitzvah. Plus, the Aruch HaShulchan, Taf Reish Tes, Siv Beis, writes, he thinks this whole Chumrah is only a Yom Kippur Chumrah. He thinks that the issue is that the Kedei Shelo Yerichu B'nei Abayis Reach HaTavshilin Kederach HaAtmanos M'Bnei Taivas HaReach Yichu Lovli De Bulmus. So it's the Yom Kippur thing. You can come into your house during the 1 hour break, 2 hour break that you have between Musaf and Mincha, and you're going to smell, and you're going to get sick because you're going to be so, the smell is going to be so intoxicating. It's not a Shabbos thing, it's a Yom Kippur thing. So I thought, to make it go through Shabbos, I didn't think that was a problem. Especially since you have all of these kulas, all these sniffim lahakel that you have. You have to prepare it for Shabbos? I don't know. On Shehiya, you're getting involved in a machlokas chaznisha mishabrura, and if you want to do Garav Vakatam, Machlokas Ramesha and Ravaran Kotler. On Hatamana, you're also getting involved in Machlokas Chazanish and Mishabura. You know, so you really have to go a double Chazanish in order to be Makel on this issue. I wasn't sure about that. So I think the real postkim are going to need to weigh in on this. Like I said, I asked Rav Shechtli, but that was almost a year ago, he wasn't yet sure. I'm going to follow up with him, hopefully. I asked Rav Sachs. He said, no, you obviously did research, tell me what you found. So I told him in 5 minutes what I just told you now, because like with him, you just say Mar Makomas, and he's like, yeah, come on. So I told him, and he said, sounds good, I'll let you know what I think. But he didn't get back to me yet. And I think the big postkim are going to have to deal with this issue. But that's the background, at least, of the issue. Have a wonderful Shabbos, everybody.